Guys, welcome back. Another episode of The Pulse. Every Monday, we're talking to cool people who are entertainers, who are empowering people, who are performers. But this may be the first time that I was actually singing and almost got caught by our guest today. Mr. Jeffrey Osborne joins us on The Pulse. How are you, sir?
I'm good today, Bill. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Like, I was happy, and I was telling you when you came on, the mute was on, and it was a good thing, because me and my producer, sound engineer, we're both in here talking about woo, woo, woo.
I wanted to hear it. I missed out on it.
Nah, I don't want to do that. Like, karaoke is one thing, but I don't know if you sing people's songs back to them. Like, you're kind of setting a rough standard, especially if you can't sing. But thank you. I do appreciate you taking the time out.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I was looking into background information. That's where we kind of start with everybody who comes on to Pulse. Is it fair to say you were born into music? Like, your whole family was doing it?
Yeah, I guess I was. Yeah, I was the youngest of 12 in my family, and everyone either sang or played an instrument. So music was all around me in my household.
And you started off, what, playing drums?
I always sang first, but I actually started playing the drums when I was about 15. And that was kind of my way in. The drums actually was the vehicle that got me into the music business. My first job was, I walked in on the OJ's one night and they had a drummer that was not playing well. This was in my hometown. And so I asked them if they were looking for a drummer. And they said, yeah, well, you know, you can find me a couple because you're kind of young. I'm like, well, you know, I know a couple of guys in town. I'll send them up and if I can come and audition. And we all auditioned and I ended up getting the job. And I was like 15 years old because that kind of got me really motivated and stimulated, knowing that I could, you know, I could do something on this level. And the same thing with LTD. I met them in my hometown. They were playing in a nightclub. They were Sam and Dave's backup band. They left Sam and Dave. They was traveling up the East Coast. And their drummer got hauled off to jail for smoking marijuana outside a nightclub. This was 1970. So that was a major offense. Wow. In 1970. Walked in, you know, the club owner asked me if I'd sit in, played a few songs with them, sang a couple songs. They asked me to join the group. So the drums were my vehicle to getting into, you know, into the music, the level where I could start recording. And then I think we did two albums, 1972, 1973, and 75. We had a big album called Love Ballad. Love Ballad was on. It's called Love to the World. Yeah. And that's when the record company said, you got to get from behind the drums. People want to see who's singing. They got four horn players standing in front of you. So that's when I stepped out front and became the lead vocalist for LTD. But if it wasn't for the drums, it wouldn't have put me in those situations.
It always amazes me when you talk to performers, particularly successful performers, how easily they kind of gloss over these things that are amazing to the rest of us. You just very casually like, yeah, you know, I mean, I walked in on the OJs. I was like, yo, can I play? You're 15 years old, roll in on the OJs, and it was no big thing. Like, oh, I got you. I know how to play the drums.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate because I was playing in a local group and we played the same club that the OJs were coming in. So, you know, the manager said, come on up and see him. So I was at the right place at the right time, you know, and it all worked out for me.
It's amazing also, and you talk about, so that was in the mid-70s when LTD and everything started, yeah, started kind of hitting. So that right. means 50 years worth of hits and success. And when you hear somebody say that back to you, what's your response to that?
My response is, damn, I'm old. 50, yeah, yeah. It's been that long, you know, 52 years, actually, that I've been recording. So, yeah, it's quite an accomplishment. You know, I'm just blessed that I'm still here and I'm still healthy and I'm still out working. So, you know.
And still touring and still performing.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
Is it disrespectful to ask how old you are?
Oh, no, I'm proud of that. I'm 75 years old.
Well, and I knew how old you are, but I wanted to make sure it was OK to go ahead and say it because, you know, right. we're establishing relationships. I'm singing during breaks and everything. We're making sure we're all good. But you sit back and think about that. I mean, that is a huge accomplishment. Not, you know, I mean, to make it to 75. Sure, but you're still on tour at 75. Like, did you ever think?
No, I never really thought about it. You know, I knew this was something that I loved and that I wanted to do for as long as I could, but I never imagined being 52 years in and still out performing, you know. But I, you know, I feel like I owe that, a lot of that, to the fact that I've taken good care of myself. You know, I've been running every day since I was 15 years old, and I've been running, I run 2 miles, I still run every day, still work out. You know, I've been a vegan for 10 years, and then I just started eating a little bit of fish, so I guess you could call it pescatarian, but I don't do dairy or anything. So I think it's all about health, diet, and keeping yourself and loving what you do, you know, and I still love what I do. So I'll continue to do it. I have some of my people that I've come up with in my era that are still performing, and they're older than I am. I mean, like Smokey's still doing it. The OJ's are still doing it. I mean, so, you know, it's very possible that you could go on forever if you love what you do and you stay healthy.
Yes, Smokey's doing it. What's his new album called?
Oh, something like orgasms.
Yeah.
I'm like, orgasms. Okay.
Listen, that's, Smokey's not messing around. Like, he's like, I'm not just performing. Smokey's 80 something. Talking about exactly. Songgasm.
Yeah. I don't know whether he's trying to make people think that he's still having them or he's still having orgasms. Maybe that's it.
All right, I'm gonna leave Smokey alone, but he's doing his thing. But when you, and people will see, because you're on tour now, you'll be at the Rivers Casino here in Philadelphia June 16th. But it's not, you haven't really even kind of slowed down the show. Like, you're still up performing, dancing there. You're not sitting there on the stool and just serenading. Although, I mean, you could, you got that kind of voice.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty active. You know, I get around the stage pretty well. I'll go out in the audience, hang with people. I'm pretty active. But like I said, I've been staying in shape for years, so it's kind of easy for me.
There are so many stories when you look back in your career, so many different hits and what have you. And when I tell people you're coming on, I always get different questions and comments from folks. My brother, who loves your music as well, said to me, ask him if he realizes how many children exist because of all the songs that he recorded. No. This is the deep probing journalism that we do here.
Do you ever, well, you know, I know a lot of people have gotten married to my songs, because I got a lot of ballads that people get married to, at least 4 or 5 ballads that I always get requested for the music, because people want to get married to it. So I'm assuming, I don't know. That's a good question. How many babies? I don't know. But I know when I was young and I was out on the road, I used to have my little mixtape of all the slow jams. We all had our slow jams tape, so I'm sure lots happened with that music back then.
Wait, so is On the Wings of Love on Jeffrey Osborne's mixtape?
No, I never had my own music on my mixtape. I never listened to myself until recently. I just started listening back because, you know, when you're out performing, you start performing the songs the way you want to, instead of the way maybe you recorded them. So I have to listen back and see exactly, oh, did I sing it that way? I better actually go back to the record here. But yeah, I never listened to myself, because I was always perfectionist and I always said I should have done this here, should have done that, why did I sing that, you know? So I never enjoy my recordings. Like, and now I'm just starting to be able to appreciate what I've done.
Okay, just now you're listening to it, yeah, and kind of embracing it. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Even with that many hits, I threw out On the Wings of Love and Love Ballad, and you know,
right,
and you could go on and on and on. And a lot of people go through a career trying to get one of those. You know, you've got multiple songs that people will sing back to you. Like that, I'd imagine that has to feel good even to you.
Oh yeah, it's a great feeling. It's amazing to go and do a show and stand up and start singing and the audience sings the whole song for you. That's like, you know, that's stuff that you dreamed about. It's like, I can't believe this is happening, you know. But yeah, I'm very blessed that I was fortunate to have quite a few hit records during the course of my career.
The woo-woo song, You Should Be Mine, not the name of the song, But is this a true story? I was reading about, what was it, your daughter or someone who?
Yeah, my daughter, she was probably 3 years old at the time. Well, no, she was maybe a little older, seven or so. And, I was recording, so I always come home and play my recordings, for my wife. And then, what do you think of this song? What do you think? And I was playing it, and she kept saying, "What's that song?" I said, "It's called You Should Be Mine." She said, "No, it's not." I said, "What is?" She said, "That's the Woo Woo song." I said, "No, it's You Should Be Mine." She said, "No, it is the Woo Woo song." So I didn't write it. So I called the songwriter. I said, "My daughter said this should be called the Woo Woo song." And they said, "You know what? You got a point there." So they actually put it in parentheses, "You Should Be Mine, the Woo Woo song." So yeah, it's a struggle.
Did your seven-year-old get a co-writing credit for coming up?
No, she should have. She should have. You know, that's what you used to say back in the day. Write a word, take a third.
Yeah. There you go. So doing this for a minute, we just talked about 50-plus years of doing this. What are the differences, touring, performing, doing all of that, then versus now? Have you seen the industry kind of evolve and change?
Oh, yeah, I've seen the industry. It's changed so much. I mean, just from the way we record now, back in the day, everybody was in the studio at one time. Everybody played at one time. It was all real musicians playing real music. The bass player would play a lick. The guitar player would play off of them. And there was so much character in the music. Today it's so different. It's like one guy in a studio with a drum machine and all these other technical machines and synthesizers. And you don't get that interaction like we did back in the day. I think that's why that music has so much character. I mean, even when you put on an album and you hear the little cracks in it going around and the surface noise, it just has such a vibe to it. So music is definitely different. The way it's recorded and the way it's written is totally different. I mean, back in the day, you wrote a verse, you wrote a bridge, and you wrote a hook, which is your chorus. Today, most writers just write a verse and that's it. And they'll sing a different melody over the verse to make it the hook. But music doesn't have the character today and the flow that some of the songs did back in the day. And, I'm growing up in a household, being the youngest of 12, I had to wait my turn to listen to what I wanted to listen to. So I got to listen to all the people before me, the Sarah Vaughans and the Ella Fitzgeralds. And, and my father was a great jazz trumpet player. So I was listening to Ellington. I was listening. And that music was just so beautiful. And, to me, it was the singers. It was a bass, drums, a piano, and the singer was the fourth instrument. And they sang like it was an instrument. And today it's just not as creative to me. Mm-hmm. Not to say that it's not more lucrative. It's probably more lucrative, but it's not as creative.
Yeah, it's that connection that you talk about. It's interesting. You're talking about the connection in the studio, interacting with people when you tour. But I grew up at a radio station. My father used to manage WDAS here in Philadelphia.
Right. Oh, I love DAS.
But I remember as a child, people like yourself and others were always coming to the station. Like it was different then. You would come there, you'd be in the studio with the DJs, talk to them, sing maybe if you were there. Okay. But you were so connected to communities and things then because, I guess you had to be. And I feel like some of that is lost also.
Oh, a lot of that is lost. I mean, that is the major connection to people that came up in my era was radio. Radio was amazing. I mean, especially Black radio. They played everything off of our albums back in the day. You didn't know what the single was. They just played everything. And even the mom-pa stores, when you think about it, used to go into those mom-pa record stores. You walk in, they come in, they'll play stuff for you. Hey, listen to this. This, you don't get any of that today. It's just so different. I mean, I talk about that in my show, the difference between back in the day when you had the turntable and you had a spindle and you put the 45 on and then you take it up, flip it over and play the B-side. And the B-side was better than the A-side. And it's like, man, we don't have that anymore. You got a digital download and that's all you get. So I miss that. I miss that a lot. I especially miss the mom and pop stores because those people were so warm to you all the time when you went in and you got a chance to listen to what before you bought your, you know, whatever your purchase was, you got a chance to listen. I used to work in a record store when I was 15 years old, part-time. Mm-hmm. And that was my thing. They would come because I would play them everything that was new. What's new, man? I'd play everything. And, you know, and that's how you sold records back in the day.
It was different. The program director at that station was a guy named Butterball.
I know, and Butterball. Oh, I knew Butterball.
Butterball was, you know, and to occupy my time, I would go into his office and he would hand me a stack of records and say, listen to these and tell me the ones that you think are good songs. You know, and nobody was paying that much attention to me, but it was the difference in time because they didn't play just the hit. You know,
that's
if the
right.
program director liked something on the other side, then that got in rotation.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And that's what I loved about that era back then. It was beautiful. Butterball was great, man. I've spent a lot of time with Butterball. We went to dinners together. He was one of those guys that broke records, you know, and that's the thing. Back in the day, there were just cities like Philadelphia and New York and D.C. that actually broke records. And L.A. was one of those following markets. They would wait to see what's happening, and then they go on your record. But those, I mean, and the jocks were personalities. Yeah. You don't see that today. They were real personalities, you know. I miss that.
Now, do people still, because I know that this generation of musicians, and some of them have been on, and a lot of the ones that we talk to, they have a high level of respect for yourself and others who came before them and kind of paved the way. They know your
right.
music. They respect your music. You know, has that been the case? Do you think that you get that level of respect from the industry? It's changed, but they still acknowledge the trailblazers.
I think so. Yeah, without a doubt. You know, because I run into a lot of the young guys and they always tell me that they listening to my stuff, and I hear my stuff being sampled by the young generation. So I know they're listening. But, you know, and I have as much respect for them as they have for me, because I admire how they went about building their careers, especially. It was so different from our era. Our era, we did not branch out and we didn't come together and do records like they do the younger people. They're, you know, you look up and they're on everybody's albums. They come together and they collaborate and they do records and they're all over the place. So you're hearing them, you know, you're hearing Snoop on this record, Snoop on that record, this one on that record, this one on that record. We didn't do that as much back in the day. And I think that hurt us. That's one of the reasons that I left LTD, because I wasn't able to branch out as an individual. And so, you know, it got to the point where, well, you know, the record companies offered me the solo project. Well, no, you can't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. You know, and then, you know, the next generation comes along like New Edition, and you got everybody in the group has a solo project, which kept the group together.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really want to leave LTD, but if I wanted to grow and evolve, I had to. Otherwise, you know, I couldn't branch out. So I do see the big difference in how they conducted themselves and how their careers branched out, because they collaborated so much. That's beautiful.
Still on tour, coming to Philly, as I said, June 16th and 17th. Some tickets still available, but I encourage people to get them. What's a Jeffrey Osborne show look like in 2023?
It's pretty much a little bit of everything. You know, I cover a lot of the LTD. Those were some of my favorite years. I mean, it was great working with a group that was self-contained, you know, four horn players, learned how to write, learned how to orchestrate for, you know, and so I do a lot of LTD, and then I do a lot of stuff for my solo albums. And, you know, and then I might even do anything. I'll jump off and do a piece of someone else's song. I have a segment in my show called, I call it Old School is the Shit, because old school is the shit. And I have a segment where my bass player comes out and play a few lines of a song, and the audience knows it immediately, which is the beauty of old school. You know those records as soon as you hear them. And so I do a little bit of everything on my show, and I really try to connect with the audience, and I really try to involve them and bring them into the show. So it's a fun show. It'll be, and we were there last year. We did one night at the casino last at Rivers, and it went so well that they asked me to do two nights this year. So we're doing 16 and 17 there, which is cool.
Yeah, I saw the merch on your website. The old school is the... You're selling shirts and whatnot.
Right. I got shirts, right?
So own it. Embrace it. So you never really stopped putting out music, but you now have another album, and that's the first time that it's a completely original album in quite some time.
Yeah, but that album was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So I haven't had anything recently. I'm writing now, though, and going to put together a little package, maybe an EP package. And I think I'm just going to put it out and test the market with my fans, just give them something to listen to. I'm not really feeling signing with another record company. Okay. I think it's time to do some stuff independently here. And, you know, there we go. I'm learning from the young folks, you know.
Hey, listen, the young folks own it. They own everything, so they can get most of the money.
That's the beauty. That's what I'm saying. That's how everything has evolved, and I love that, you know.
We talk on The Pulse about how people are using their voice for good, how people are changing and empowering communities. You've had a foundation for years. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I have a foundation. It's the Jeffrey Osborne Foundation. I was born and raised in Providence, Rhode Island. So I started doing a celebrity golf tournament there. And it's been, probably 15 years into my 15th year. I haven't done it since COVID, but I'm doing it again this year on July 10th and 11th. But I started it, and Magic Johnson was my host for the first 5 years. He hosted it for me, and we had incredible. Smokey comes every year. The OJs come. Johnny Gill comes. Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind & Fire. We jam on top of having the golf tournament. So I get incredible celebrities. You know, Chris Tucker comes, Dr. J, everybody. It's a great tournament. And I give all the money to 6 different charities in Rhode Island. So, you know, I've been giving away almost $2 million to charities now in my hometown. So it's a fun event for me. And I feel like I'm, you know, doing something that my mom would be proud of, giving back to the, you know, people in Rhode Island.
When you see Smokey, tell him you might want to chill on the songgasm.
I see Smokey. He's a really good friend. He's probably one of the greatest people I know. But yeah, he's knocked me too. I was like, what?
That made you double take when I saw him on the show. He got introduced. I went, wait, what? Like, oh, okay, Smokey.
But he's in amazing shape. Yes, there's a guy that's in amazing shape at his age. So, you know,
he can still sing.
Yeah, no, his show is great. No, Smokey got it going on.
Did I read that your son not only occasionally performed with you, but also was writing, producing? So you're keeping it going.
Yeah, my son is a big part of my show. He does my sound. He's an incredible sound engineer. So he does my house sound. He's writing. He's doing his own thing, too. And we had a song on my last album that we wrote together, and he rapped on it. He's more of a rapper. He sings a little bit, but he's more of a rapper. Incredible engineer, though. He's, so it's nice to be able to, you know, work with your kid, travel with your kids. It's kind of nice.
So you're clearly still loving this and just going to keep doing it, keep passing on your knowledge, keep performing, keep reminding people that old school is the ish.
That's right. I'm definitely going to keep doing it. I mean, I'm assuming somewhere down the line, I'll probably want to slow down a little. I mean, it's tougher now because travel is tough. I mean, airlines are so inconsistent. You know, you can miss shows messing around now out there with these airlines. So it's not the fun of traveling has gone, but the fun of being on the stage is still there. And so I still have that love. And it's my first love. I definitely love that over recording, because it's the interaction, the chemistry that you have between you and yourself and the audience. So I'll probably keep doing that for a while. You know, I've slowed down, though. I do basically weekends now, you know, and I'm home during the week, spend with my family, and I go out on the weekends and do shows, but I'm out every week.
I just feel like it would be cool for Pop Pop to be Jeffrey Osborne. You can sit there and go tell people, yo, come on, let's go see the show. And you're out there woo-woo-wooing them, and they can bring people in. That would be cool. We end all of these segments, as I said, with the concept of use your voice for good. We talked about your charities. We talked about your shows. But when you hear use your voice for good, what does that phrase mean to you?
That means stay connected, stay connected to the people, to the communities, however you can. Not just singing, but you have the ability to influence people, and you have to realize that, and you have to, you know, be responsible, make sure that you stay responsible, and use your voice to help any situation that you can, you know, and I think that's important for all of us.
I don't put people on the spot, so if you don't want to, we will edit this part out, but you can give them a, you can give them a little something if you want to.
Oh, okay, well, can you whoop? Can you whoop? Can you whoop? Should be mine, all mine.
See, that's exactly why I didn't sing it when you came on. Because I'm not going to be the one who's on here cracking all up and then you actually do it. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I appreciate you.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate it. All right. My pleasure.
We will see you soon.
Got to come out to the show. Got to come hang out at the show a little bit.
I'm going to do that. Thank you so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson. Today with Can You Woo Woo Woo? Yes, Jeffrey Osborne. I was smiling the whole time we were doing this interview because that's just taking you back to your childhood and maybe even younger. Just having that music playing and then you kind of grow up with it and the message. And then when you meet people and they're legitimately cool, again, I say it very often that that is my favorite part of this show. When people that you hoped would be cool actually turn out to be. Like, that's why I enjoy doing this and I hope that you do as well. Do me a favor and hit subscribe, follow, like, any of those things that will give you the notification of whenever a new episode of The Pulse comes out. Head on over to YouTube and do a search of The Pulse with Bill Anderson. You may find some cool episodes that you didn't even know that we did. People like Master P, Jan LaVanzant, and LeVar Ball, and a little bit of everybody has been on The Pulse. So check it out. And hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I'd love to hear from you. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.